You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with two hosts today. You know that I am Randy Sutton, retired law enforcement officer from Las Vegas PD, and the host of Blue Lives Radio, and we have a co-host, and you've heard him before. He's been around law enforcement for a long, long time, made a lot of contributions, and I'm proud to call him my friend. Ray, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, thanks, Randy. Yeah, Ray Dietrich, did about 20 years of law enforcement in Southern California, and I'm fifth-generation deputy sheriff, so I'm here to tell it like it is.
So together, this is the Randy and Ray Show here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and there is a lot to talk about. It seems like, Ray, that every week we could probably do a two-hour show instead of an hour show.
Oh, easily. Lots of material at all times. It never stops.
So let's get right to it with something that's hot on the news right now, and that is the city that we seem to talk about so often here on Blue Lives Radio, and that is the city of Portland. It is a city that used to be a gorgeous destination, a wonderful community to live in, and now it is home to Antifa. And once again, this weekend revealed itself to be a riot that took place, with Antifa basically roaming the streets at will, beating people, including a well-known journalist. And the mayor, Ted Wheeler, does nothing to stop it. What is going on in Portland?
You know, they've given a license to this Antifa, you know, basically a terrorist organization, just to go out and cause mayhem, ordering the police to stand down, causing this kind of situation just to fester. And now you have not only that journalist, I think there was an elderly man attacked with a crowbar, multiple attacks, multiple people getting put in the hospital. It's just completely out of control. And this is, these are the social justice warriors who are, you know, fighting for inclusiveness and progressiveness, right? Like this is the new violent left, I guess.
The mayor, Ted Wheeler, is, in my estimation, basically complicit in everything that's taken place there when it comes down to violence. Wheeler, when he took office as mayor, his liberal agenda is beyond comprehension. He has actually, first thing he did was he appointed himself police commissioner. So not only is he the mayor pulling the strings from the city leadership, but he also appointed himself commissioner of police, ostensibly now running the police department, even though he has hired a police chief who's basically been nothing but a placeholder, a figurehead, if you will, in that chief's position. And have you ever heard, Ray, of a mayor doing something as megalomaniac as this?
No, not at all. It sounds like it should be some kind of banana republic, third party country when the local politician appoints himself and some power of authority over the police immediately upon taking office. It's not normal. At least say that.
So he appoints himself police commissioner, and immediately upon his taking office, you know, Portland has always been a hotbed of protests. Okay, you know, the right for peaceful protest is protected under our Constitution. It is an American way of life. But the group Antifa has basically made Portland their home, and they're far, far from a peaceful organization. You know, let's be real about this. They are, in essence, a domestic terrorist organization, and yet they are being given basically the key to the city by this mayor.
Oh yeah, and they're out there violently engaging and attacking people. And this isn't like it's the first event. It wasn't like this weekend was the first time Antifa has been violent in the city of in the city of Portland. This is ongoing. It's just escalating because they're being unchecked, and with the policies that this mayor is being put in. So the real question is, what are they going to do about it? Like, and now even worse, they're putting these officers, because guess what? It's not their fault that horrible policies are coming down from the top. So what's going to happen is this is going to get completely out of control, like it is right now. And at some point, hopefully, common sense kicks in and they go, okay, we have to actually police people who are breaking the law in front of us at some point. And they're going to have to send these officers in. And guess who's going to be the bad guys now? They're going to be the ones getting in these massive uses of force because they've let this thing go out of control and now they have to rein it back using the police. So it's not a great situation up there.
So, you know, there's so much to this story. The Portland Police Department, there was a major article that came out about them because the first article that came out was that they are bleeding people. They are bleeding law enforcement officers. Cops are running away from the Portland Police Bureau. Why? Because of just what we've been discussing. Their policies make it impossible to do police work in Portland. And then, you know, they have these incredible use of force policies, which basically, if you put your hands on somebody as a cop, no matter how justified it is, they can find a reason to discipline you. So the cops aren't protecting themselves. They're not protecting others because they can't get involved for fear of getting in trouble. So cops are leaving in droves. I think they have 200 or some spaces available. They tried to give a police test. Only 60 people applied, and only 3 could pass a background check. What does that tell you?
I'll tell you what. When I was first applying in the late 90s, they used to have to do tests in arenas. Like, literally, there'd be 10, 20,000 applicants for 20 jobs to be a police officer. And you see it dropping and dropping and dropping in general across the whole country. But when you have an agency that everyone's trying to leave, there's not anyone going to be trying to fill behind that. So guess what happens next? They lower their standards, and it's an even worse situation. So, again, it's horrible management out there, and they don't understand all of the repercussions for all of their actions. Having poor policies breeds poor morale, which breeds a bunch of cops that are going to be responsive completely instead of doing proactive police work. That's the least or the worst case scenario for citizens of Portland. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. Who's going to be hurting here? It's the citizens of Portland who've already seen criminals just basically running the streets of their city, especially with Antifa. But then there was an article that came out, I'm going to say, a month after I reported on the fact that only 60 people could even applied for the job. And that came out a couple weeks ago, another article that announced that they were the police bureau is now going to be changing its hiring standards. Of course, we all know what that means, don't we? That means they are going to be lowering their standards for hiring people.
It means internal affairs is going to be extremely busy for the next 5 years cleaning up all the disastrous hires that they're about to take on, is what that means. And I can say that from firsthand, working in an agency that lowered their standards for about a 2-year period. And probably 75% of the IA cases that did come through were from those people, period.
Yeah, this is history repeating itself. This, you know, there's nothing new in history. I mean, there's nothing new in the world. It's just history keeps on happening. This happened with police agencies in the 80s that wanted to hire because of court decisions, forcing them to hire blacks, Hispanics, for political purposes. So what they did was they like Miami. Miami was a perfect example. They in essence, opened it up to any Spanish-speaking people, and they didn't even do background checks. So that they hired a whole bunch of Hispanic police officers. Well, shockingly, not really, a bunch of these were criminals. They were drug dealers. They were thieves, and what happened was a massive corruption scandal took place where a bunch of these officers who were hired under that regime actually formed a ring that was killing dope dealers, stealing their dope and reselling it. So this is nothing new, but here you would figure in 2019 we would have learned these lessons by now. But instead, you get a leader, which shows the toxicity of a leader like Ted Wheeler. This guy should be held accountable for his for his basically his decimation of the entire Portland Police Bureau. And this incident that just took place again, can you imagine what police agency in the world would allow over and over again people to roam their streets wearing black masks, carrying weapons, and just allow them carte blanche to attack people? Only three arrests were made during this whole event. What does that tell you, Ray?
It's just insanity, is what it tells me, to be honest. It's setting them up for massive failure, and all of the things you're talking about. Like, it's completely out of control. They're playing to where these cops can't win when they do have to flip the switch. Because at some point, it's going to get too crazy out there, and they're going to have to go back to an enforcement model. Otherwise, who knows how far that progresses? You can't just have criminals running the streets. You can't just have criminals running the streets, attacking people, carrying weapons, and having masks on. At some point, that has to take over. And guess what? All of these cops who have to stand down now, when they get out there and engage, they're gonna be looking at, like, the use of force beefs and all of the public outrage because they're out there fighting Antifa in the streets, and they're really just setting them up for it. So it's a disaster.
It is a disaster, and I was happy to see that Ted Cruz, the senator, actually called for an investigation into Wheeler, a federal investigation into his administration. And I for one welcome that, as well as why isn't there any discussion about listing Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization? I mean, they fit the bill all the way down the line. I don't even hear anybody suggesting that. And I don't get it.
It's completely crazy. I mean, let's just call it what it is. If this was a right-wing organization, the media would not be stopping about it, and there would be 10 times the outrage. It's just the media lens doesn't particularly like to push the narrative against Antifa. So it's kind of this forgotten thing, and I don't know what it's going to take other than this. I'm hoping that, these attacks and these serious injuries. One guy, the journalist, had quick dry cement thrown in his face, right? Chemical burns alone, no matter what the rest of the effect it is, but hopefully something good can come of this. Maybe these investigations that are going to come open, or just the awareness, will change policy and they'll put Antifa in check. But Antifa is a problem all over the West Coast, up and down these major cities. It needs to be addressed, and they are a domestic terrorist organization. So I cannot believe we haven't gotten to that point with the label with them yet.
Me too. Well, this is, it's funny because we haven't seen as much activity from them as we did in the past when the Trump administration took over. You don't see them as much, except where they feel safe. And where do they feel safe? They feel safe in Portland, which is, I think, a pretty telling issue right now. So let's move on, though. There's been a lot of other stuff going on. It's no wonder that law enforcement officers feel under siege in this country. I talk about the war on cops, and the war on cops is a whole lot more than just the physical violence that takes place. There's the emotional damage that gets done when officers feel abandoned by their not only by their agencies but by their communities. And so let's talk about some really disgusting behavior in the wake of the murder of a young police officer in California. We suffered the loss of Sacramento police officer Tara O'Sullivan, who was still in field training when she was gunned down just weeks ago. And first, we saw some amazing community outreach and outpouring of empathy for this officer. In fact, there was a memorial, basically a big boulder that was painted over in her honor. But it didn't last long, did it?
No, it was vandalized on two different occasions, and it's just disgusting to see what they did with it. I'm not sure if it was the first or the second time, but they put "Blue Lives Don't Exist" over this rock that's supposed to, and this is a trainee, right? This is a brand new cop, brand new to the department. We were both, field training officers. That's a special thing, and for her to get, murdered during her training phase, and then the community comes in and does these like an awesome memorial, has her badge on there. They paint it over and say "Blue lives don't exist," right? It's disgusting. And this is the same incident where people were taunting the officers working the perimeter while it was occurring, and they had an officer down. So I don't know what's going on in Sacramento. They've had some crazy decisions in the, in the recent past, or riots and fallout from shootings. I don't know if it's related to that, but it's really sad.
I think there's absolutely no doubt that Sacramento has, and here's the thing. There are so many good folks in Sacramento that support their law enforcement. And Sacramento PD is a really good police department. They're trained well. They've got good solid policies. Their leadership is pretty good. But that's not good enough for certain people. So here, as you said, and I'm glad you brought this up. The day that she was killed, her body lay was she was shot with a guy by a guy with a rifle during a simple move out, a domestic dispute. And then the suspect who killed her basically held police at bay for hours and shooting with a high-powered rifle while the officers had to watch their fallen comrade just lay there and bleed out to death because they couldn't get to her. Now go think what that does to emotional the emotional well-being of those officers. But then something else took place on the perimeter. Go into that just a little bit more because I find that so infuriating, so foul.
I don't have it in front of me. I don't want to misquote it, but I know that there was taunting on the perimeter during the scene, like while the incident was going on. Like you said, the shooting, it lasted a long time. It was a big SWAT call out, big perimeter, and people were taunting and harassing officers on the scene who knew that they were there for an officer down. So if you have the actual details, I don't want to misquote it.
Yeah, well, I actually saw some of the video. I was it infuriated me. Now the cops are trying to keep the perimeter very wide because, even a handgun round can go over a mile, let alone a high-powered rifle. So they're trying to keep the perimeter, and instead of the community supporting the fact that they're trying to keep them safe, I heard people call the police a bunch of punks. That hey, I'm glad one of you is dead. I mean, it was as ugly as it gets. Trying to taunt the officers into taking action against them. This is what I call the culture of confrontation that we have developed in this country. And this type of behavior is humanity at its worst, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, I saw it and I was just disgusted by it. But so we have this incident in California, where they vandalized her memorial. But then you go all the way to Philadelphia, and the same damn thing happened just this week for the mural of a slain Philadelphia police sergeant was defaced as well.
The lack of respect, there is no more respect, Randy. It's insane. And just like you said, to back up, in Philadelphia, yes, they're awesome citizens too. And the same applies with Sacramento and everything else. But what is happening in the community that this is where, people's actions are going? We're going so far anti-cop again that, I've never seen the level of disrespect to police that it's after memorials. We've always, had our issues. There's always neighborhoods that I work where you might catch a rock to the windshield, occasionally, and that's fine. If you want to, target active law enforcement officers, that's another thing, Ben. than going after memorials. These guys have families, right? Like, they have families, the community cares, there's people that maintain these memorials, and it's just disgusting that's where we've gone. I don't know if I hate to shit on social media, but I don't know if it's a byproduct of that, where people, you know, in their comments can just be complete savages, and now that's translating to what they do, you know, in the real world, or what is the root of this, but it's just disgusting.
And it is, the anonymity, I think, does play a role in this. So what they did for against this officer's mural, they painted across it in red letters, all basically ACAB, which stands for All Cops Are Bastards. You know, and his sister, the sergeant's sister, released a statement on her family's behalf, and it said, "The ignorance and disrespect shown towards police is at an all-time high. Learning of the blatant disrespect that has been repeatedly shown towards my brother has resulted in an indescribable emotional reaction." You know, you can just feel the pain in that statement that these people are feeling for, you know, and this officer gave his life for his community. And I guess I find this not only sad, but infuriating, and also at the same time, I think it seems to be symptomatic of the war on cops, because, like I said, the war on cops is far more than just the violence that occurs. It is much more widespread than that, and this is part of it.
If people wonder why cops are sometimes not always the most courteous out there, or are a little rough around the edges, well maybe it's because not only are they getting violently assaulted in the streets, but the memory of those who actually get killed is being desecrated around them. Like, it's a weird time to be a cop right now. And you know, I gotta say, you know, I'm happy to have it behind me a little bit at this point. And that's not something I say lightly. I love this job. It's just getting to be kind of gross out there. It's just hate that's focused on police officers now. And I don't think it used to be like that. You know, talking to my dad he worked Watts riots and all that stuff. In the 70s, there was a period of time, like an L.A. sheriff, where they had to put deputies with rifles on the rooftops because they were catching so many Molotov cocktails. But this was before the internet, so it was local and regional, and the hate was not the widespread just machine that it is now. I think it's the worst it's ever been.
Unfortunately, I tend to agree with you. Let's go on. There's a court decision I want to talk about. Because this court decision came out of nowhere, and I think that this could have a very, very far-reaching effect on all on not all law enforcement, but on the safety of tens of thousands of people. So the Idaho Supreme Court just made a ruling that cops need a warrant to arrest for all misdemeanors they don't witness. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them. Contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, Ray, I want to talk about some a new court decision that just came out that I think could have a massive effect on not just the police officers, but on the safety of many people in our communities. And this decision comes out of Idaho. I'll read the headline. Court says cops need warrant to arrest for all misdemeanors they don't witness. And this came out of an Idaho Supreme Court ruling, which will require law enforcement to drastically change how they handle misdemeanor cases. So just for the lay audience out there, the way that the arrest situations work for pretty much everyone in the country for cops is that a police officer can arrest on a felony charge based on probable cause. And they don't have to witness it. They just need the probable cause to make the arrest. Sometimes they get warrants. Sometimes they make them on probable cause arrests on the scene. For misdemeanors, now that's misdemeanors are like, simple assaults, drug, you know, some minor drug use. There are certain, whatever a misdemeanor crime is, almost always cops have to get warrants or they issue a citation or a citizen's arrest and they do the paperwork. But there were some major exceptions that came as a result of circumstances in the past. And one is what, Ray? I mean, there's two major exceptions to this rule.
Well, the first is domestic violence. I mean, if it became apparent that if there was a misdemeanor domestic violent case and, you know, everything would meet the criteria for an arrest, that arrest should be made, even if it's not in the presence, because of safety issues of leaving a suspect behind in a domestic violent situation.
Right. And you were probably on when the cases came down that changed the law requiring police to arrest.
Yeah, it did change. It was a huge change, and it's a mandatory. You shall arrest if these domestic violence, you know, crimes are met, essentially.
So what was happening in the old days, police would get called to a domestic. There would be, you know, the woman might be beat up or the husband might be beat up, and the spouse is standing there, and they could basically just smile at the officer. The officer would have to take a report, file the report, and meanwhile just leave the situation with the people in place. And of course, you know what happened. Some murders took place, and that changed the whole complexion of how police handled these cases. And as you just said, Ray, they put the every state came out and said, no, no, no. If the police respond and there is probable cause to believe that this crime took place, an officer shall arrest. There wouldn't, in fact, they took away all of the possibilities there for handling it any other way. So now here we have a court decision, Supreme Court decision, which says that they ruled that law enforcement officers can no longer arrest suspects for misdemeanor offenses unless they have a warrant or watched the crime being committed, quote, without exception. What do you think the ramifications of this are going to be?
Well, I can only imagine being a patrol cop with that coming out, because they still have to take into account that domestic violence victim who's afraid to press charges. And actually, in this one, I guess it doesn't matter if they want to press charges or not. If it's a misdemeanor, if it's not in their presence, that's it. So what is actually going to occur? They're probably going to be calling judges and waking them up over and over and over. The on-call judge that's doing verbal warrants over the phone is not going to be a happy person in that state, county by county. I can't even imagine the unintended consequences of that crime, because, you know, going through that long, tedious process to get a warrant, the other choice is to walk away and ignore it and, you know, and hope that nothing happens to that victim, which is not exactly the direction that we should be going. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I'm not sure what they're thinking. And this is the state Supreme Court. So hopefully they can push it a little bit farther and get that knocked out at the federal level. But it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And of course, this threw law enforcement agencies and advocacy groups into, you know, absolute bedlam. No one expected this coming down. Here's from the police chief in Coeur d'Alene. He says, from my personal perspective, this ruling has really handcuffed law enforcement. It really altered our ability to protect our folks. So now this is what the chief says. Instead of arresting domestic violence suspects and removing them from the volatile situation, officers will be required to issue them a citation instead. This flies in the face of all of the recent, you know, law enforcement, and this is diametrically opposed to everything the cops have been taught for the last, oh, I'm going to say 20 years or so.
It's the absolute core of patrol. Disturbances, domestic disturbances, no matter what, even if a crime doesn't occur, the real goal is to get them separated for the night. Like, even if they're fighting, if I could get someone to leave for the night, I knew that nothing else would happen that night, most likely.
Taking away
a tool like that is crazy. Like, not being able to arrest on a misdemeanor for domestic is crazy. It's a tool that keeps people alive, period. So I don't know. I would hate to be a cop and deal with that right now.
Man, so this happened in Idaho. I'll be very interested in watching if this takes place in other states too. If they look at this and they start using this, because you know that there are going to be lawyers out there that are now going to jump on this and try and create this snowball effect in other states, because this is going to be very, very lucrative for lawyers. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, the domestic violence and the DUI suspects are going to love those lawyers. And it's gross, and it's the truth that you will see them trying to exploit this and take this into other states.
So these systems, I call it the criminal injustice system, because the system itself seems to be more and more against the very system or the very concepts of justice that we became cops for and that were meant to protect the citizens. You know, you have activist district attorneys who refuse to prosecute cases based on their own political beliefs of what should be and should not be prosecuted. Now you have a Supreme Court in a state that is diametrically opposed to every other state. It's kind of crazy. While we're talking about that, let's talk about a story out of Colorado, which just infuriates me. And once again, shows the criminal injustice system. So in Colorado, the Department of Corrections Parole Board won't tell cops about the prisoners they release after one of the chiefs exposed their new mass release. How's this for craziness? The Colorado DOC made an announcement shortly after Greeley Police Chief Mark Jones criticized the parole board. They announced that it will no longer provide a list of parolees to law enforcement in Weld County after a local police chief criticized the number of violent offenders who are being released from prison early. Can you imagine this?
Nope, not at all. It's amazing the lack of non-cooperation other government agencies, like more and more and more, have with police departments and sheriff's departments. It's like when I worked a street team, Randy, like that was what I would do. Basically, we'd get the hot list of parolees that were out in the month and figure out who we were going to go say hello to. Let them know that, hey, we're still here and we're still, you know, part of your life, Mr. Parolee. And to take that away, you're just leaving these guys unchecked. These guys have search terms for a reason. That people, they are still technically inmates when they're parolees. They're just on the street. They fall into the same, search requirements and different things as if they're inmates. And for them to not allow the cops, number one, to know who's coming out and when and prepare and deal with that, or to just let the community know, hey, you've got 100 guys coming out for violence, whatever it is. Why? The question is why? They were mad because they looked bad for releasing too many? Like, what is the reason that they would not share that information with the police department? It's crazy. I mean, every story you bring me, Randy, is just crazier. So I don't know what's going on.
Well, so let's talk about what brought this about, because this is what's so infuriating, that the arrogance on the part of the state of Colorado. Now, this, there's no doubt in my mind, this comes from the governor, because the governor there is one of these social activists that believes in basically just releasing everybody from prison. And so the parole board, of course, takes their lead from the governor. So here's what started all this, though. The Greeley police chief, Mark Jones, he says, I recently found out about a violent Greeley gang member who committed second-degree murder in 1997, and he's already being released into our community on parole. The unnamed offender, who was originally ordered to serve, get this, 48 years in prison, also violently stabbed another inmate while incarcerated, the chief explained. Yet he's still being released, even though the mandatory release date wasn't supposed to be until April of 2043. Are you kidding me?
It's crazy. And they got called out on it. He puts the information out, makes them look bad, and then now they're not going to cooperate with that information. Period. It's politics. It always goes back to politics.
According to the chief, 9 of the 14 offenders who were released on parole in May did not have a place to live when they walked out of prison, making it even more difficult for parole officers to do their jobs. So he went public with it. Well, now because he had the guts to go public and expose what is in essence malfeasance in office by these parole board members, now they're going to punish him. And they're not going to, we're not going to tell you who we're going to release. Have you ever heard of anything more juvenile and just as arrogant as could be?
You know, other than in the city of Los Angeles, no. But this is pretty bad. This is extremely bad. It gets worse every story. Like I said, this is crazy. This is just a politics. You get me in trouble or make me look bad, so I'm going to screw the community to save face. That's it.
And so, you know, if the governor was a real governor, and they could take this to the governor and say, hey, look at this malfeasance that's taking place, but because he's on board with the liberal thinking of this parole board, what it is, you know, this is the criminal justice system fighting against each other. The whole point of law enforcement, I mean, let's cut all the bullshit away. And the reality is that police become the police in order to police, to hunt down those offenders who are preying on their cities and communities and committing crimes. That's what is expected of the police, and it is expected of the criminal justice system to deal with those offenders. Now, because of the mindset now of reform, quote unquote, now it's, even though they did commit the crimes, we shouldn't really hold them responsible for it. I mean, you're seeing the same thing, you know, where parolees are now being allowed to serve on juries in some places.
Politicians are now all of a sudden, instead of being able to get their policies into law, they're using the police or lack of communication with the police as a weapon, right? Like, you're seeing a lot in these sanctuary cities where, you know, basically, that's what I was kind of referring to in the city of LA. Like, take Los Angeles, and they're ordering their departments, and even the sheriff of Los Angeles, my old department, the sheriff of Los Angeles refuses to deal with ICE, Customs, Border Patrol, any of those agencies because of immigration issues. A lot of these city and county governments are ordering their departments not to deal with federal agencies to cooperate with, like, immigration issues. How do they make a policy that effectively changes the law? Like, that's what they're doing. They're using their politics and their pull or their influence in politics over a police or a sheriff's department to keep them from enforcing laws that they like. Not changing the law, but just, hey, you know what? We're not going to cooperate with them anymore. It's completely just craziness, man. Like, I don't understand how we allow this to happen, where people are choosing when to work with the police or when to let other agencies disclose information to the police or not. And that's okay because it fits their political agenda. Not thinking of what laws are actually being enforced or not. Who cares about that, right? Like, that's where we're at.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at. Where it doesn't matter if we're going to protect the people, which is what all laws are based upon. All laws are based on protecting the communities. And yet, these many of these but governors, prosecutors, district attorneys, are instead turning on the own people that either elected them or appointed them to protect them. I'll give you an example out of Houston. The Houston District Attorney, Kim Ogg, boy, she's a beauty. She's another one that needs to go. She just gave no prison plea deal to a gunman accused of shooting three people. Career criminal Clayton Brown, an offender with a lengthy violent criminal history, was arrested in 2018 for shooting two people at a Houston block party. This is coming from the Houston Police Officers Union. One of his victims was a 15-year-old girl. Brown was released on bond, but ended up back in custody a short while later for shooting yet another person. Now, this is the quote by the union. Now, you would think District Attorney Kim Ogg and her office would throw the book at him, the union president noted, but you would be wrong. In exchange for Brown's guilty plea in one of the shootings, Ogg agreed to dismiss two cases, then give him deferred adjudication, which means no jail time, on the third.
And this is after committing it on a third shooting on bail, right, Randy? Like,
yes.
I didn't miss that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's lunacy. And she's a prosecutor. She's the district attorney.
She's the elected district attorney.
Is it the stats that they're after, or is it they're just their own brand of justice? Like, they want to put their own flavor on the laws in the book. I don't know if it's hey, we want just a great prosecution rate. Sometimes it's that. I just so many bad decisions are happening down in Houston from that DA's office. I think you're right. She has to go. It's getting painful down there.
No, this is all based on liberal politics. She is one of those activist prosecutors who got elected by George Soros money. And mm-hmm. basically, you know, has her own political agenda, which includes not prosecuting for all kinds of crimes, but now shooting people and not getting and not being held responsible to actually go to prison for it. I mean, this is something that is, it's out of some weird, you know, futuristic movie where nobody's held accountable for anything. It's like, what's that movie where on one night you're allowed to go out and kill people?
Oh, it's The Purge. We have The Purge in Chicago and Houston now. It's happening in both places. It's absolutely crazy. I keep getting stuck on the fact that this guy was on bail. If there's ever a person who you should not make a deal with, a no-jail deal with, it's someone who's committing the same type of crime they're accused of while they're on bail. They're essentially telling you that, hey, if you keep me home, I don't give a shit. I'm just going to do my thing and keep going, which he did, and now he's got no jail time. If that was my 15-year-old daughter that was shot, there would be some serious problems and issues for that district attorney's office, I promise you. Like, that is, it's just a crazy decision. I don't know what's going to take to get rid of him, Randy, but a few of these have to go.
You know, you just brought up an interesting point. Let's talk about this for a second. So the people who live in Houston, they're following this, they're watching what's going on. If the people do not believe that justice will be served by the police and by the courts, what happens next? If you think that, like you said, your daughter gets shot by this punk who's out on bail, who's not going to face any jail time for it, what's the thought that goes through your mind about what might start happening?
Well, people are going to start taking it in their own hands. Like, period. If they stop prosecuting major crimes or crime in general, people, the victims and the victims' families will start to take these things into their own hands. And it's just, that's just human nature. People need to see justice, period. And if people aren't seeing people get justice, they're gonna do it on the street.
That, you hit it right on the head, man. I mean, can you imagine the frustration? I mean, even when somebody sees, you know, the killer of their loved one, or, you know, the rapist getting 7 years or something, you know, it's even frustrating to see, you know, a smaller jail sentence than you think they deserve. But then you go and there's no jail sentence. I certainly would begin to think along the lines of, oh, really? Well, there will be justice. This is like setting a, you know, taking fertile ground and putting the horse manure of these district attorneys and prosecutors, fertilizing it to sow the seeds of discontent and of taking law into their own hands.
Well, yeah, and are they going to be cutting deals with the victims that shoot the offenders?
I mean, oh, no, they'll put them in prison.
Right, exactly right. That's exactly my point. If they get 20 years, they're going to do 18 of them in prison. That's just the way it is. It's crazy. But, you know, it's activist DAs. Like, just, I don't remember this being a thing. I for some reason, I may be wrong, but the last 5 years, it's become a thing. I don't remember activist DAs before that. So I don't know how we're getting these people in the office, but got to stop.
Well, unfortunately, I know how. This isn't happening by accident. There is a design by organizations, and I keep on. I mean, this guy's the boogeyman of everything that's bad that's going on in involving the criminal justice system here, and it's George Soros. This guy has sunk millions and millions and millions of dollars into the election coffers of people that he is basically inserting into the criminal justice system in order to destroy it from within. I mean, this is part of a calculated plot, and this isn't by accident. You know, this is in essence part of the playbook of groups that wanted to destroy from within, and he's been effective.
Right.
I mean, there's activist prosecutors in major cities in this country now. St. Louis, this woman, Houston, Philadelphia.
Chicago.
Chicago. That's in a whole different world. But finally, she's facing investigation. They're actually, you know, they've just appointed a special prosecutor into investigating Kim Fox, which I think is the best thing ever.
Yeah, those Chicago PD guys need a break. Like she's got to go to this activism DA, new thing that's happened. It's just ripping everything apart from the inside, just like they want. But you know, that's why I think it's important that you know the listener here gets this side of it, where we're talking straight. We don't have to hold our punches and not say certain things because we're going to get in trouble with our employer. We don't have that issue. But these are the kinds of channels and platforms where we need to stay our side. So if you're listening, share this stuff with people who will listen for a reason. Like, this is very important. It's happening right in front of us. Like, people are basically attacking the criminal justice system from within, right in front of us, and it's our job to fight back.
That is why we exist here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, to talk about these topics, which unfortunately are not talked about elsewhere. So, you know, we're coming close to the end of our time, but there's one other thing I want to bring up, and that is the heartbreaking news that a fourth officer has died by suicide in New York City in June. You know, we're just crossed into July, but four officers is just something that is so heartbreaking and becoming literally an epidemic of law enforcement suicide in America. But the NYPD just hit four. And I just, you know, the New York police commissioner called the recent rash of officers of suicides a mental health crisis. And it truly, truly is.
It's awful, and you know so well from you know the Wounded Blue Foundation and all the great work you do there. It is an epidemic. It is a complete crisis across the country, especially obviously in New York. But you know, we just have to do better. We have to make sure that these guys have the resources that they feel comfortable to go to. It's about a lot of it. You know, it's about the stigma of coming forward when you're having these issues, whether it's PTSD or anything else that's going on. You know, cops hate to go to supervision and basically get run through the ringer, get their gun taken from them, and have to go, you know, be evaluated, all those things. So there's a balance there that needs to get fixed. You know, it needs to be a place where these guys and gals who are out there doing the work should be able to get the help they need to continue. No one should be punished. No one should be thought less of because they're having, you know, what I like to call, for lack of a better term, head noise from this job. This job will give you head noise. Like, it's okay. It's a normal thing. So us not being able to embrace that and deal with it and on a national level, like just across the board, every agency is on the same page. Like, that's where we need to get to, because this is how guys, you know, it's their way out. A lot of them, it's horrible. We've all known people, you know, who have committed suicide in this job, and it continues, and it's our job to make it to where at least they feel like they can come in and have support.
Amen to that. And let me say this to any law enforcement officer out there. My organization exists for you. Go to thewoundedblue.org, thewoundedblue.org, and we are there for you. We've run out of time. This was the Randy and Ray Show today here on Blue Lives Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. Ray, thanks so much for joining me again.
Thanks, Randy. I appreciate it.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week here on Blue Lives Radio, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have three more names to read, three more men and women who have given the ultimate sacrifice. First is Police Officer Michael Vincent Langsdorf of the North County Police Cooperative in Missouri. Police Officer Michael Vincent Langsdorf was shot and killed after responding to a call at 6250 Page Avenue involving a man attempting to cash a fraudulent check. He was shot several minutes after contacting the suspect at the business. The man who shot them was taken into custody. Officer Langdorf had served with North County Police Cooperative for only 3 months. He previously served with the St. Louis Metropolitan Police for 17 years. He is survived by his two children and fiancée. Police Officer Michael Vincent Langsdorf, North County Police Cooperative, Missouri. End of watch, June 23rd, 2019. Second is Deputy Sheriff Troy P. Chisholm of the Fulton County Sheriff's Office in Illinois. Deputy Sheriff Troy Chisholm was shot and killed while responding to a disturbance call 5200 block of East Troy Road at 2 p.m. He was shot by a subject who then barricaded himself inside the home. Suspect was arrested and taken into custody without incident the next day. Deputy Chisholm has served with the Fulton County Sheriff's Office for 4.5 years. He also served as a paramedic in the Fulton County EMA as a member of the West Central Special Response Team. Deputy Sheriff Troy P. Chisholm, Fulton County Sheriff's Office, Illinois. End of watch, Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. And the third to fall is Detective Luis Alvarez of the New York City Police Department, New York. Detective Luis Alvarez died as the result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Detective Luis Alvarez, New York City Police Department. End of watch, Saturday, June 29th, 2019. May they rest in peace.
We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on The Voice of American Law Enforcement.